A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been running speed tests again and getting suspicious. He wants to know why the headline download number tells you almost nothing about whether your connection is actually good, and what the tools that measure latency under load, buffer bloat, jitter, and loss actually reveal about whether a line is solid. He's asking, what do those diagnostics see that the speed test doesn't? And why is the number everyone trusts the one that lies the hardest?
This is one of those topics where the thing everyone does is almost perfectly wrong. The speed test number is the most visible metric in home networking, and it's engineered to hide exactly the problems that make a connection feel terrible.
So why does the number everyone stares at tell us so little? Let's start with what the speed test actually measures.
A typical speed test runs for 10 to 30 seconds. It opens multiple parallel connections to a nearby server, pushes data as fast as it can, and reports the peak throughput. That's it. It's measuring the best case scenario. One application, no competing traffic, short duration. And that's exactly the condition under which a bad connection looks good.
It's like judging a car's highway performance by its top speed on a closed track with no other vehicles.
Right. And the real world is the highway at rush hour with your kids streaming video in the back seat while you're on a work call. The speed test doesn't simulate any of that. But there are four metrics that actually tell you whether your connection holds up under real use. Latency under load is the time it takes for a packet to travel when the line is saturated. Buffer bloat is latency inflation caused by oversized router buffers filling up during congestion. Jitter is the variance in that latency, how much it bounces around. And loss is packets that simply never arrive.
Four things the speed test doesn't measure. Let's take them one at a time. Buffer bloat first, because it's the one that explains why a 900 megabit connection can feel worse than a 50 megabit one.
To understand buffer bloat, we need to look at what happens inside your router when the line gets saturated. Jim Geddes, he's the guy who named and popularized this problem through the bufferbloat.net project. He documented something that was hiding in plain sight for years. Routers and modems use these big FIFO buffers, first in, first out. When you saturate your connection, say you're uploading a large file, packets pile up in that buffer. Instead of dropping packets, which would signal the sender to slow down via TCP's congestion control, the router just holds them, and holds them, and holds them.
So the buffer is a queue, and the queue gets long.
Really long. Your idle latency might be 5 milliseconds to your router. Start a large upload, and suddenly that ping jumps to 300, 400, 500 milliseconds. Your own traffic is queuing behind itself. The buffer is full, and every new packet has to wait for everything ahead of it to drain before it can go anywhere.
5 milliseconds to 500. That's not a degradation. That's a different connection.
And here's the thing. The speed test loves this. The buffer exists because it's a cheap way to smooth out bursts and maximize throughput numbers. The ISP can say, look, we delivered every packet, no drops, full speed. What they don't say is that half those packets arrived half a second late.
So, the buffer is a cheat code for the speed test.
It's a trade-off that the marketing department loves and the engineering department should hate. Throughput for latency. And the speed test only measures throughput.
What does a buffer bloat test actually do differently?
The tools Daniel's asking about, the DSLR report speed test, Waveform's buffer bloat test, Cloudflare speed test, they measure latency before, during, and after saturating the line. They run upload and download traffic simultaneously, and while that's happening, they're pinging to see what happens to latency. Waveform gives you a letter grade, A+ to F, based on how much your latency inflates under load. And A+ means latency barely moved. And F means it went to the moon.
And Cloudflare shows the latency graph in real time during the test.
That graph is the most honest thing a speed test has ever done. You can watch the spike happen. The download number finishes, and you think, great, 900 megabits. Then you look at the latency graph, and it's a mountain range. That's your connection under load. That's what your video call actually experiences.
The number says fast. The graph says broken.
And the mechanism behind it breaks more than just gaming. TCP's congestion control relies on packet loss as a signal. When the buffer holds packets instead of dropping them, TCP never learns to slow down. The sender keeps pushing at full speed. The buffer stays full. Latency stays high, and the connection feels sluggish for everything. Web browsing, where you're loading dozens of small assets, gets destroyed by this. Each request has to fight through that bloated buffer.
So it's not just that your game lags. It's that the entire connection's control loop is broken.
The control loop is blind. TCP is designed to probe for available bandwidth by increasing speed until it sees loss, then backing off. The buffer hides the loss, so TCP keeps probing, keeps filling the buffer, and the latency never recovers. It's a positive feedback loop of badness.
Let's talk about jitter and loss. You said jitter is the variance in latency. Why does that matter more than the average?
Because real-time applications don't care about the average. A VoIP call sends packets every 20 milliseconds. If they arrive at 20, 22, 18, 21 milliseconds, the call sounds fine. If they arrive at 20, 40, 15, 60, 8, same average, but the call sounds like a robot drowning. Jitter is what makes video calls freeze and voices break up. The codec can buffer a little bit to smooth it out, but if the variance is wider than the buffer, you get dropouts.
And loss?
Loss is the silent killer. A 1% packet loss rate can reduce TCP throughput by 50% or more. TCP interprets every lost packet as congestion, so it throttles the sending rate. 1% loss, half your speed gone. And the speed test won't show it because it runs multiple parallel connections and retransmits aggressively during its short window. It masks the loss.
Wait, 1% loss cuts throughput in half.
It's not a linear relationship. TCP's congestion window shrinks dramatically on loss detection, and the recovery time depends on the round-trip time. Over a long fat pipe with even tiny loss, the math gets brutal fast. The bandwidth delay product means the pipe is never full because TCP keeps backing off.
So you can have a gigabit connection, 1% loss, and you're effectively getting 500 megabits or less, and the speed test still says 900.
Because the speed test runs for 15 seconds with 8 parallel connections and doesn't measure sustained behavior. It's a sprint, not a marathon, and it's measuring the wrong thing in the wrong way.
What about the tools themselves? Daniel specifically asked which utilities exist and what they actually measure.
Let's go through them. Waveform's buffer bloat test is the most accessible. Browser-based, free, gives you that letter grade and shows latency during upload, during download, and during both simultaneously. The DSLR report speed test does something similar, but also measures jitter and gives you a quality score. Cloudflare speed test shows the latency graph in real time, which is the most transparent thing any speed test has ever done.
Cloudflare's graph is the one that makes people angry.
It should. You see the spike and you can't unsee it. Beyond the browser tools, there's iPerf 3, which is the command line workhorse. You run a server on one machine and a client on another, and it measures throughput, jitter, and loss between them. It's what network engineers actually use. Flent, the flexible network tester, wraps iPerf and NetPerf and runs the RRUL test, real-time response under load, which is the gold standard for measuring buffer bloat. It graphs latency versus throughput over time.
RRUL is the one that the buffer bloat project uses in their demonstrations.
Right. And then there's MTIR, my traceroute, which combines ping and traceroute into a continuous measurement. It shows you per-hop latency and loss over time, so you can see whether the problem is in your home, at the ISP, or somewhere in the middle. And IRT, the isochronous round-trip tester, which measures latency with microsecond precision by tightly controlling packet timing.
So the toolchain exists. It's free. It's browser-based in some cases. Why does almost nobody run these?
Because the industry has spent 20 years training everyone to stare at the download number. ISPs advertise speed. The FCC's broadband labels require advertised speeds. Speed test apps show a big number and a green check mark. There's no regulatory requirement to measure latency under load, jitter, or buffer bloat. None.
So the incentive is to ship hardware with big buffers, ace the speed test, and let the latency be someone else's problem.
And that's exactly what happened. The fix exists. It's been published since 2012. ActiveQ management algorithms like Codel, FQ_Kotal, and the newer Cape Point. Common applications. Kept enhanced, they manage buffer occupancy intelligently. Instead of a dumb FIFO queue that fills until it overflows, they track how long packets have been sitting and drop the ones that have been there too long. This signals TCP to slow down before the buffer fills, keeping latency low while maintaining throughput.
So the router says this packet has been here too long, goodbye, instead of welcome to the queue, enjoy your stay.
And that one change fixes the whole control loop. TCP gets the lost signal early, backs off, the buffer drains, latency stays low. Cake is the newest variant and it's remarkably good. It shapes traffic per host, so one device uploading a backup doesn't destroy latency for everyone else on the network.
And this is built into what, exactly?
OpenERT, DDERT, and most open source router firmware. It's not in your ISP-provided modem-router combo. The hardware that 90% of people use doesn't have it. The fix exists, it's free software, it's been tested for over a decade, and it's not deployed where it matters.
Because deploying it doesn't make the speed test number go up.
It might even make it go down slightly because AQM deliberately drops packets to control latency. A connection with Cake enabled might show 940 megabits instead of 950. The ISP sees that and says no thanks.
Six fewer megabits on a test no customer would ever notice, in exchange for latency that doesn't explode under load.
The math is obvious to anyone who understands the problem, but the person making the purchasing decision at the ISP isn't the person whose video call freezes.
Let's talk about what a healthy connection actually looks like. You mentioned latency under load should stay close to idle.
A good rule of thumb is that latency under load should stay within 10 to 20 milliseconds of your idle latency. If you ping your router at 1 millisecond idle and it goes to 15 during a large upload, that's fine, you won't notice. If it goes to 300, your connection is broken for interactive use, no matter what the speed test says.
So 900 megabits with 5 milliseconds under load is genuinely excellent. 900 megabits with 400 milliseconds under load is a bad connection, wearing a good number.
And the practical test is trivial. Start a video call, then upload a large file. If the call degrades, you have buffer bloat. That's it. You don't need any tools to diagnose it. The tools just quantify how bad it is.
Starlink had this problem early on. People saw the speed numbers and assumed the latency complaints were overblown, but the issue was buffer bloat and jitter, not raw speed.
Starlink's early reputation for bad latency was largely buffer bloat in their ground terminals. The raw throughput was fine, sometimes excellent. But the latency variance was enormous because the satellite handoff and the buffer behavior interacted badly. They've improved it significantly with firmware updates that deploy better queue management, but it's a perfect case study in how headline numbers mislead.
The speed test said fast. The Zoom call said otherwise.
And the Zoom call was right, every time.
What about the tools disagreeing with each other? Daniel mentioned that explaining why they disagree is more interesting than just listing them.
The big split is single stream versus multi-stream. OklaSpeedTest.net uses multiple parallel TCP connections by default. This saturates the link faster and masks problems like loss and buffer bloat because each individual stream's congestion control issues get averaged out. A single stream test, like IPR3 with one connection, or Fast.com's default behavior, is more punishing. It shows you what a single large download actually experiences.
So Ookla is the optimist. Fast.com is closer to reality.
Fast.com is also interesting because it's run by Netflix and uses the same servers that serve video content. ISPs have an incentive to make Netflix look good, so some of them prioritize traffic to Fast.com servers. The tool you use changes the answer you get because the network treats different traffic differently.
The measurement itself changes the measurement.
It's the observer effect in networking. Cloudflare's test is different again. It measures against Cloudflare's edge, which is distributed globally, and it shows you the latency breakdown. The tools disagree because they're measuring different things under different conditions against different endpoints. There's no single number that captures connection quality. There's a profile.
So the answer to how fast is my internet is under what conditions, to which server, with what other traffic, measured how.
That's too many words for a sticker on the box, so we get the download number.
You mentioned the FCC's broadband labels don't measure any of this.
The labels require advertised speeds, typical latency, and packet loss, but the latency measurement is idle latency, not latency under load. And the loss measurement is a snapshot, not sustained behavior under congestion. They're measuring the connection at rest, not the connection in use. It's like measuring a car's fuel efficiency while it's parked.
The regulatory framework is measuring the wrong thing. The tools that measure the right thing are free and ignored. And the fix has been available for over a decade and isn't deployed in consumer hardware.
That's the state of home networking in three clauses. The buffer bloat problem was identified, named, solved, and published. The solution is open source and proven. And the average home router still ships with a giant unmanaged FIFO buffer because it makes the speed test number bigger.
What would it take for that to change?
Either regulation that requires latency under load measurements on broadband labels, or a consumer application that's sensitive enough to buffer bloat that customer complaints force the issue. Cloud gaming might be it. GeForce Now, Xbox Cloud Gaming. Those services are exquisitely sensitive to latency variants. A connection that buffers Netflix perfectly can be unplayable for cloud gaming, and the customer can feel the difference immediately.
The speed test says you're fine. The game says you're not. And the customer calls the ISP.
The ISP runs a speed test and says, looks good to us. That loop has to break somewhere. The tools exist to break it. The customer can run waveform, see the F-grade, and say, no, look at this. But that requires knowing the tools exist.
Which brings us back to Daniel's question. These tools reveal that your connection's behavior under load is the only thing that matters, and the headline number is a measurement of behavior at rest. They're measuring different things, and the one that correlates with actual experience is the one nobody looks at.
On that note, I've been thinking about the ISP incentive structure, and there's a piece I keep coming back to.
What piece?
The person who configured the buffer on your router wasn't malicious. They were given a spec that said, maximize throughput. They did. The buffer is doing exactly what it was designed to do, hold packets so the link never goes idle. The problem is that the spec was wrong. The goal should have been maximize throughput while keeping latency below 20 milliseconds under load. That's a harder problem, but it's solvable, and it's been solved.
The spec was wrong, and the spec was written by the marketing department.
The spec was written by the industry's collective decision that the download number is the product. Everything else is an afterthought.
1998. I was configuring DSLAMs for a regional ISP in Connecticut. We had a competitor two towns over, same backhaul, same speeds, same everything. The only thing customers compared was the speed test number. So we put the biggest buffers we could on our DSLAMs, 512 kilobytes per port, which was enormous for the time. Our speed test numbers were 15% higher than theirs. We knew it inflated latency. We knew. But the marketing department had a chart, and the chart had a red line going up, and that was the only thing anyone cared about.
You were the one turning the knob.
I was the one turning the knob. We'd run a test, watch the ping spike to 800 milliseconds, and say, well, the download number's good. I've been sitting here listening to you two explain why that was a bad idea, and you're right, and I did it anyway.
You built the problem we're describing.
For 2 years. Then I left and went to work for a company that made point-of-sale terminals, which is a whole different story. But I kept the router. Cisco 2500. Still in a box in the garage. The one I used to test the buffer configs before we pushed them to production. Every few years, I think about firing it up and seeing if it still boots.
The router you used to break latency for an entire town is in your garage.
It's a piece of history, not a proud piece, but history.
When did you realize it was the wrong approach?
About 2 years after I left. Getty's published the buffer bloat paper, and I read it and thought, we could have done this in 98. The shaping algorithms, the queue management, we had the hardware. It wasn't fast enough to run Codel, but we could have done something. Nobody asked. Nobody cared. The speed test number was the product.
Do you still have the paper?
Printed it out. It's in the garage somewhere, probably next to the router. I kept it because it was the first time I saw someone explain exactly what I'd been doing wrong and exactly how to fix it, and the fix was 12 lines of C.
12 lines.
The difference between a connection that works and a connection that lies is about 12 lines of queue management code. And 28 years later, most routers still don't have it.
The confession is that you were part of the problem. The fix was known in your lifetime, and the industry chose not to deploy it.
The industry chose the number. The number always wins.
The number always wins until the application breaks. cloud gaming might finally be the thing that breaks it, because you can't buffer a game input. The latency is the experience.
I'll believe it when I see it. I've been waiting 28 years for someone to care about latency. The speed test number is still on the billboard.
That confession raises a bigger question. Will anything actually change? The tools exist. The fix exists. The problem is documented. And the industry's incentive is still to ship hardware that aces the speed test and fails the video call.
The open question is whether regulation catches up before the application layer forces the issue. Cloud gaming, remote surgery, whatever the killer low-latency app turns out to be, something will eventually make buffer bloat unbearable for enough people that the ISP can't just say, speed test looks fine.
Or the ISP will just sell you a gaming tier with the queue management enabled, and charge extra for the fix they should have deployed everywhere.
That's the cynical take, and it's probably right. See a cake as a premium feature. 12 lines of C, $10 a month.
If you take one thing from this, it's that the number you've been staring at measures your connection at rest. The tools that measure it under load are free, browser-based, and take 60 seconds to run. The next time your connection feels bad, run a buffer bloat test before you blame your ISP. The number that matters isn't the one on the billboard.
If the latency graph looks like a mountain range, you know exactly what's wrong, and exactly what your ISP's hardware isn't doing about it.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Frumingtop, who apparently spent the late 90s breaking the internet for an entire Connecticut town and still has the router to prove it.
This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.